Please join me at 1 Samuel 25, verse 1, where we remind ourselves that the prophet Samuel, probably approaching 80 years of age, dies. This happens during that latter portion of King Saul's reign, when David is on the run from King Saul. The most recent story we heard was when David spared Saul's life in the cave near En Gedi, and then composed some psalms related to that. I believe all of that probably happened in the summer of 1019 BC. I haven't mentioned my chronological applications recently. So right around 1019 BC in that summer. Now, later that year, maybe into the beginning of the next year, so we're talking about over the changeover from 1019 to 1018 BC, this happens. Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him. So King Saul and all the people of Israel gather together to have a state funeral, a very big time of mourning over the loss of Prophet Samuel. I'm guessing that there would have been 30 days of official mourning. Saul has not been face-to-face in conversation with the prophet Samuel for probably going on 16, 17 years, because in his second year of reign, his sin caused Samuel to cut off relationship. It's true that very recently, in the chronology we're looking at right now, David ran off to Samuel for his protection, and Saul came after him, but there was really no conversation between Samuel and Saul at that time. Saul was just simply possessed by the Holy Spirit and made to take off his royal robes and prophesy on the ground in front of Samuel and David for quite a few hours. So here we are, a few months after that. Samuel's dead. And I'm sure that Saul went to the funeral with all the people to show honor for this great man. And they buried him in his house at Ramah. And I always like to stress, this is Ramaphaim Zophim, the place of his birth, the place where his parents were, and now he's being buried there at his hometown, which is in Ephraimite territory. Up right next to where Bethel probably is located, within a couple of miles of Bethel, more than likely. David didn't get to come to the funeral because David is on the run. Think about how hard that must have been for him, not to be able to come publicly to the funeral of the great prophet that anointed him as the next king of Israel. Instead, this is what we read happened. Then David rose. He went to the wilderness of Paran, which Paran proper is quite a little way south of the southern end of the Dead Sea. But it stretches northward up to an area along the southwest corner of the Dead Sea. And so that is wilderness area. It's also referred to, at least in that portion up by the Dead Sea, as the wilderness of Ma'on. And so he ends up being in this area that is southeast from Hebron. And we know that he's been sticking around in this wilderness area to try to stay away from King Saul. Verse number 2. There was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. Now, Carmel is a name of a city that's in this exact same region. And this man, we are told, was very rich. And to be specific about it, he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. So he's got a lot of these animals for meat and for milk and cheese and for their fleece, for their hair, for their skins. All of this is material that people are willing to pay for. And so he has made a very good business for himself. Now, he is not doing all of the hands-on things himself. There's just too many of these animals. So he has shepherds that are taking care of these animals, and those shepherds are scattered into different areas throughout the region. And this is important to understand, that over the last months, since David moved into the area of Maon, David's men have been, I guess, partnering up is the best way to put it, with some of these shepherding groups, where the men protect them from maybe sheep thieves, goat thieves, but also from wild animals, things of that nature. And David and his men have become, protectors to these shepherds. And that's important to this next part of the story. He was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now, sheep shearing time comes in the later spring, early summer. You want to take off all of that heavy wool and some of that overgrown hair. And then you can process it, and it becomes valuable. So sheep shearing time was, it was a very special harvest time. And so you had harvest activities, which meant you get together and you do your work during the day, and then you kind of celebrate at night. You might have contests. I know there's some sheep shearing places in the modern world that they have contests to see how much wool one person can shear off sheep in a single day, or whether or not they can bring the fleece off in one big piece. So I'm sure that they had similar things to that in the ancient world. But it was a big party for anyone that was related to the business of these sheep and goats. Verse number 3. Now the man, the name of the man was Nabal. And the name of his wife, Abigail. The woman was discerning and beautiful, but the man was harsh and badly behaved. So they are a mismatched couple. Nabal is notorious for being a very foolish guy, which is ironic because his name actually, I guess it's not ironic, it's fitting perhaps, because his name is actually the word for foolish. I don't know if maybe his parents, when they were coming up with a name during those first 7 or so days of his life, just felt that he acted in a foolish way, so they gave him this name. But his people know he lives up to that name. But his wife, just a sharp lady, a kind lady, a thoughtful lady, and she is much more preferred by the people that work for them. Now, we're also told he was a Calebite, which means he is a direct descendant of the famous hero of the Israelis of Moses' day, Caleb, the one who was one of the good two spies, him and Joshua, and the one who told Moses and then later affirmed it with Joshua, yeah, there might be giants at Hebron, but I'm going to take them. and I want that land for myself. Well, here we are, many centuries later, one of his great, multiple times great grandsons is living a little bit southeast from Hebron, and he is nothing like his ancestor. He's a bad guy. Verse number 4. David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men. And David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, greet him in my name, and thus shall you greet him. Shalom lachem, peace be to you. Peace be to your house. Peace be to all you have. So basically, hello, greetings from David. Verse 7, I hear that you have shearers. Now, your shepherds have been with us. We did them no harm. They missed nothing all the time they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, they'll tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come on a feast day. Please, give whatever you have on hand to your servants and to your son David. Now, again, we have to understand the common practice throughout the time of sheep shearing was that the person who owned all the sheep would basically give an extended party to his workers. It was like a year-end bonus, if you will. It was the holiday party. And so they'd work during the day, and then at night, there would be roasted lamb or roasted goat in great quantities, and all the bread, and there'd be wine as well. And all of this would be free of charge for those that worked throughout the year to produce this harvest. And so David's, whose men have protected some of these shepherding groups, sends some guys and says, well, we can't come in person to the festival because that would put everybody at risk, but we'd like to have a little takeaway for our part. A very reasonable request. Verse number 9. When David's young men came, they said all this to Nabal in the name of David, and then they waited because the polite thing would have been, oh, yeah, we're sorry that you can't stick around and be part of the festivities here, but yeah, you can have some takeaway. That'd be great. But that's not what happened. Nabal answered David's servants. Who's this David? Who's this son of Jesse? Now, he knows exactly who he is. The word has gotten around that Saul is looking for David because David is a renegade from Saul's army. Then Nabal says, oh, there's so many servants these days who are breaking away from their masters. Shall I take my bread, my water, my meat that I've killed for my shearers and give it to men who come from I don't know where? So basically, no, you can't have any takeaway. So David's young men turned away. They came back and told him all this. Excuse me. Now, I want you to understand the psychology of what's about to happen. Some of you have probably experienced it. And that is when you've been mistreated, marginalized, had nasty things said about you, done to you for some time, and you really haven't done anything back against all of that. Nothing really effective. Every once in a while, some little thing will happen that just sets you off because you've got all this pent-up frustration, all this pent-up anger inside of you. And so you have this inappropriate blow-up about the little thing. Well, that's what happens here. David's proper response should have been, wow, how rude is that? And then maybe go and write a psalm about it. But that's not what he does. David said to his men, every man strap on your sword. Every man of them strapped on his sword, and David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David, while 200 men remained with the baggage. So he's got about 600 men, we've heard about this, that are actively acting as his combat force. Whenever he hears about Philistine stuff, he goes out and deals with that. We've seen that happen. So he leaves 200 in their hidden encampment to kind of take care of the family members that are with them in this place. And then he takes 400 of the guys, and he plans on going and killing some people. Now, that's not appropriate. But let's be honest about all of this. When people are rude to you, that is not a capital crime. That is not capital punishment time. And the scripture itself, the word of God, the Mosaic law, certainly doesn't give that as a proper response to being mistreated in such a fashion. So David is, he's letting his anger about Saul and those other guys take a wrong turn and come out in this fashion. And thankfully, God sends him a lady to curb that negative attitude before he carries it out. Verse number 14, but one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed at them. He said nasty things to them. Yet those men were very good to us. We suffered no harm. We didn't miss anything when we were in the fields, as long as they went with us. With them, they were a wall to us, both by night, by day, all the while that we were with them keeping the sheep. So this is how we knew that that was happening over the last several months, because probably David came to the wilderness of Maon in the latter part of summer, maybe the beginning part of fall, and then throughout the fall and all through the winter. So perhaps as much as 6 months, David's men have been interacting with these shepherds. And so here's the testimony of some of them that were there. Verse 17, now therefore know this, consider what you should do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his house, and he is such a worthless man that no one can speak to him. The word is that he's going to get us all killed here. That's what these people are telling Abigail. He was so rude to David's men that he's going to get us all killed. So Abigail takes steps. Abigail made haste. She took 200 loaves. This is all out of the party supplies. 2 skins of wine. Don't think of little skins, think of big sheepskins. 5 sheep already prepared, so they're already cut up and ready to be put on the spit. 5 seahs of parched grain. Each seah is about 7 liters of dry measure. So that's quite a bit of grain ready to be eaten. 100 clusters of raisins and 200 cakes of figs, and she laid them on donkeys. So basically, she is providing the takeaway, the very thing that David had asked for. And they, let's be honest, if David and his guys had showed up at this party, they would have eaten a lot more than this. And so this is a representative sample of what should have been given as just a thank you for their work. And so that's what she does. She said to her young men, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So he doesn't bother to touch base with him because he's just such a foolish guy, just like his name. So she sends some messengers ahead. as she rode on the donkey and came down under cover of the mountain, behold, David and his men came toward her, and she met them. So God works this out. This is a divine appointment here. David is coming to the party, and his intention is to take vengeance for the slight that he had suffered from Nabal. And that vengeance was going to include death. Not appropriate, but he is inappropriately venting here. And so God causes Abigail to connect with him before he ever gets close to Carmel. So David had said, "Surely in vain I've guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he's returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him." So he plans on terminating the Nabal line. Now when Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her feet and bowed to the ground. So she shows extreme deference to him. She fell at his feet and said, "On me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant." So she says, "Let me be the one that is responsible for this misunderstanding. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow, Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." The word Nabal, the word for folly, is the idea of somebody that doesn't think properly according to morality, according to God's way of doing things. That's the biblical understanding of folly, not thinking and doing things God's way. And so she says, "Look, he's got an appropriate name because that's exactly what he's like." Now, this was more than likely an arranged marriage. So don't be shocked when she says this about her husband. She probably was not happy to have been saddled with him, but it was the family arrangements that were best for herself and her family and for her kids after her to be aligned into this man's family and wealth. That's the reality of the time period. But listen to what she says next. Says, "But your servant didn't see the young men of my Lord whom you sent," basically intimating, "if I had, I would have taken care of it. Now then, my Lord, as he who is lives, as your soul lives, because he who is has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal," meaning that they will be facing God's judgment. So she wants David to understand, "You haven't done anything yet inappropriate, and I am thanking God that I got here in time to stop that." Verse 27, "Now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant," meaning me, meaning Abigail, "because I didn't realize what was going on, that my husband was being a Nabal, being a fool." It says, "You forgive me, for he who is will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of he who is, and evil shall not be found in you so long as you live." Now, David is famous, and she is just repeating back to him that reality that he's been the hero of the people of Israel in the name of he who is. And so she is, again, kind of pushing him with these words, You know what the right thing is to do. I know you're angry, but you know what the right thing is to do. Verse 29, if men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of he who is your God, meaning God will always save you. The lives of your enemies, he shall sling out from the hollow of his sling. That's a throwback to the whole David and Goliath story that started his heroic public story. And when he who has done to my Lord, according to all the good that has been spoken concerning you and has appointed you prince over Israel. So the word is apparently out now that David is slated to be the next king. He is the anointed of the Lord. Then my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. And when he who is has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. So she comes right out now and says, you know what the right thing is to do and what the wrong thing is not to do. I am thankful you're going to have a clear conscience whenever you come to the throne, because you're not going to do today what you were originally thinking about doing. And David's response, which is what we're going to have to close on today, is coming to his senses. David said to Abigail, blessed be he who is the God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet you. Blessed be your discretion. Blessed be you who have kept me this day from blood guilt and from working salvation with my own hand. For as surely as he who is the God of Israel lives, who has restrained me from hurting you, unless you'd hurried and come to meet me, truly by morning, there would not have been left a Nabal so much as one male. So he acknowledges, you are right. I shouldn't have been thinking about doing what I was about to do. I am so thankful God put you here to help me come to my senses.